fasci di combattimento, it was called, a movement composed of ex-army officers and various other toughs who were used as a kind of anti-labor militia. They specialized in attacking unions, peasant farm cooperatives, socialists, communists, and anarchists. After World War I, Italy's parliamentary government faced a post-war recession. To maintain profit levels, the large industrialists and big landowners would have to slash wages and raise prices. The state, in turn, would have to provide the big owners with massive subsidies and tax exemptions. To finance this corporate welfareism, the populace would have to be taxed more heavily, and social welfare expenditures would have to be drastically cut. Does all of this sound familiar? But the government wasn't completely free to apply these harsh measures, because many Italian workers and peasants had their own unions and fairly strong political organizations, with demonstrations, strikes, boycotts, factory takeovers, the forcible occupation of farmlands, and all these things.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
RCT Pittsburgh 88.3. My name is Anthony Cacciato, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Now, before we get into the mix of things today, just wanted to remind you that everything that's said today on the program is not necessarily representative of the views of WRCT or its members, and strictly the views of myself. So welcome. Welcome to The Angry Young Man, that wonderful, amazing time of the week, depending on whether or not it's a Tuesday or a Thursday. Welcome, and that statement might not make sense right now, but this does re-air on Tuesdays. So, hello Tuesday people, you're in the future. Now, I was supposed to have a guest today. Said guest has played hooky. It's okay, you know, I don't blame them. It's beautiful outside for the first day in a couple days. I mean, you don't have to look too far outside the window to see that it's sunny and, you know, at least a little warm. I'm glad it's not, you know, torrential downpour like what ended up. I don't know if any of you saw the point flooded. Then those the poor people that mulched PNC Park just completely flooded. Have to go and probably redo that. But I digress. Anyways, so given the fact that this is no longer going to be the discussion that we were going to have, going to be doing something a little different. See, I'm an economics student, and economics is a kind of passion area for me. Definitely enjoy talking about the wonderful, fun world of economics, and that doesn't, you know, I'm pretty sure most people wouldn't agree there, but there's definitely some very pertinent stuff to speak about as it relates to the issue of economic policy currently in the United States. Particularly, you look at the issue of current spending at the federal level and the inflationary results of it. So kind of want to talk about that a little bit. I'm going to speak a little bit about, you know, well, and I'll get into this a little bit. With inflation and massive spending comes the devaluation of the U.S. dollar, which makes it a less attractive method of spending or saving. Where some people have looked to replace that then with investment in either precious metals like gold or silver, and some have gone to digital currencies. Many have decided to go that way, inclusive of our federal government, looking to create a central bank digital currency. I'm talking a little bit about the inherent issues with the central bank digital currency and why we should be afraid of it, potentially, or concerned at the very least. Not necessarily afraid, maybe concerned at the outset. Definitely some scary things in there. But also then finally kind of wrapping around talking about how this all goes back to the grander issue of banking, not just central banking, but banking on the whole. So if this all kind of resonates with you, stay tuned. But if it doesn't resonate with you, I believe that this is something that you could listen to. It would be fun to listen to, potentially. Keep an open ear. See what we have going on. But before we do launch into that, also just letting you know that WRCT is supported by Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full coffee bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches and breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to study, eat, and hang with friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email PR at WRCT for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Also, just a couple shows here on WRCT. We have From Here to Eternity. Everyone thinks they know the 80s hits, but on the other side of the Atlantic lies a treasure trove of synth-drenched sounds that filled the airwaves of Europe back in the day. Take a trip back to the 80s you never knew with DJ Tony Tunes, From Here to Eternity, Mondays at 4 p.m. Also, we have Kaleidoscope. Tune into Kaleidoscope, an eclectic hour of music with your very own DJ Kate, Mondays at 8 p.m., only on WRCT Pittsburgh. Add to the colorful mix by calling in requests. Well, anyways, now that we have that out of the way, let's get to the meat of the program for the day, talking a little bit about these wonderful, wonderful economic topics. So, inflation. Basically, one of the large issues that we've had in the past 3 or so years is massive, massive deficit spending. Now, deficit spending, spending more than we're taking in taxes. And you can't look at this issue without looking at specific examples like our Inflation Reduction Act, which, surprise, surprise, did not help inflation, as well as the infrastructure bill that was passed. Both have a very large price tag on it. We're talking trillions of dollars. Now, we take in a sizable amount of tax revenue, an egregious amount, but the amount of money that we were spending on these two bills combined is not something that we could really put the gap with our tax revenue. So the expenditure is outpacing what we're taking in. So as a result, we have to borrow. We have to borrow the money to spend, which inevitably results in the Federal Reserve needing to kind of keep pace by printing more money. Now, what does this mean? If you print more money, you are going to devalue the currency. And the reason this being is if you have, like, if you have so the basic economic supply and demand, there's demand for money. And if more people are demanding more money, the less money there is, the more valuable each individual dollar is because there's less of it in circulation. You print more money, more people are going to be able to get $1 on average, which means that they're going to be able to acquire it for, and they're going to have less of a desire to kind of put up more value to that because there's just more of it there. So you kind of scale this out. You flood the economy with new money. Money is worth less because there's just more money, hence the issue of inflation. You slowly lose the value of your currency. And this is something that tended to not be a crazy issue for a while, mainly because we had the gold standard. Now, the gold standard basically ended up tying the value of our currency to a set amount of gold that we had in our national reserve. So you could never really go beyond whatever amount of gold you were able to put into our reserves. That severely limited the ability to grow the money supply, and protected, at least in some ways, the buying power of the dollar, the purchasing power of the dollar, which made it easier to save, which made it easier to be able to afford things. And what happened was, as we moved away from it and we moved to what we call now fiat currency, which is basically the currency is worth as much as we're willing to say it's worth. It's not backed by anything except the, quote, full faith and credit of the United States. Now, the full faith and credit of the United States, because the United States is a large country with a large military, means a lot. But it's interesting to think if, you know, there's a lot that we're able to get away with as a country of our size and influence, particularly as it comes to our monetary and fiscal policy. If we're able to exert our influence abroad, we're able to get away with irresponsible policy when it comes to that. We don't have to worry about the dollar being undercut because the dollar is used in most as the means of international exchange. We don't need to worry about the issues that are inherent to printing this money and devaluing it because people aren't moving away from it. What are they going to turn to? And this is where countries like Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa have moved to form the BRICS currency union to try to counteract that. Hasn't become an issue that's too big just yet. We'll keep an eye on it. But all this to say that we're kind of digging ourselves into a deeper and deeper hole where it hasn't necessarily become apparent how bad it is yet. Just because we're living in the kind of rose-tinted reality of being the world's superpower still. And we don't have to worry about our consequences for our actions just yet economically. But there's a really good Ludwig von Mises quote. Now, he is someone that I'm going to reference a little bit today because he says a lot of good stuff as it relates to this issue of inflation, monetary policy, fiscal policy, and the necessity to be prudent and exercise restraint when it comes to these issues. So he said something which I think explains this well, and it's talking specifically about the economic policy of the United States. If I can find it really quick, it is something that I go back to often, and I think I've got it right here. Yes. One of the privileges of the rich man is that he can afford to be foolish much longer than the poor man. And this is the situation of the United States. The financial policy of the United States is very bad and getting worse. Perhaps the United States can afford to be foolish a bit longer than some other countries. And this was said in the 1970s by Milton Friedman. Not Milton Friedman, sorry. Von Mises. Milton Friedman is someone I'm going to bring up a little bit later, but von Mises outline this issue just as it was getting bad. Von Mises is unfortunately no longer with us, but if he saw how things were looking right now, it would be a mix of I told you so and shock and panic. and I think that's a valid response because what we're looking at is a slow descent into, like, we're not facing the consequences of the pit that we've dug ourselves into. But eventually we're going to have to climb ourselves out because we're going to realize that we've run out of food and water and we're slowly starving at the bottom of this pit that we've dug for ourselves. And we're going to have to climb out. And it's going to be a very painful process when that eventually hits us. So we've continued to pursue this. And it's concerning that it's both parties that pursue this agenda of massive fiscal irresponsibility. You have Republicans that will, you know, cry fiscal responsibility under a Democratic administration, which is valid because Joe Biden as president has spent a ludicrous amount of money when he had the Democratic trifecta at the beginning of his term. But we can't look at that and then also not look at the fact that under Republican administrations, the amount of money that's been thrown at the military and other projects, which have cost billions of dollars, are also equally as fiscally irresponsible. And we've kind of just gotten to this back and forth of spend, spend, spend. And even when we're, you know, looking at, you know, Republicans who are claiming that they're for fiscal responsibility, they're not acting on it. And they're, you know, it's just kind of an issue of the rot of the system in some ways, but it will come back to bite us. All that to say, that's kind of the issue on the fiscal irresponsibility side and what that ends up looking like for, you know, what is perpetuating the issue. But what does that look like in the real terms? What does that look like for people who have to deal with the results of inflationary policy? I think we saw a lot of that as a result of the COVID era inflation. You know, it was a very real thing to see prices increase for gas, for our groceries, for things like that. And that was a very real example of that. But this has been happening for a very long time, even pre-COVID. You saw the issue of prices. If you looked back at, like, how much did a soda cost in the 1950s? And it was like 50 cents. But now it was like $2.50 about 30, 40 years later. And it had a lot to do with the diminishing buying power of the dollar. And it only got worse as we abandoned the gold standard. I mean, it's only getting worse. Things are only getting more expensive. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that there is just ongoing diminishing purchasing power of the dollar. Now, this will happen naturally over time, and it should happen on a very long slope trajectory. But it's happening very quickly. And when it happens very quickly, people cannot catch up. Wages do not catch up. Wages increase over time alongside these prices, and that's how it should happen. As there are just more people, we need more money in circulation in order to accommodate for that. But that's a very critical thing to understand, that the pie is not finite when it comes to the ability for people to get money. The pie always grows, and there's enough room at the table for everybody. But when the pie is not growing and everything else is, it becomes very difficult to hold on. And that's kind of what we've seen as a result of the COVID era inflationary policy. Inflationary result of COVID era policy. And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse as we've kind of dropped the facade of trying to be at least fiscally somewhat responsible. The price tags we have on government projects now are still at COVID levels of spending, which, you know, even Keynesians who say that we need to spend our way out of the, you know, pandemics and the recessions, are kind of looking at what we're still doing, and they're like, you know, pump the brakes, even that's too far. And it's continued to be, this is why you'll have issues where, you know, prices are still high and wages are not catching up. People are arguing for government to step in. And what you do by kind of artificially pushing this along faster is something that's very critical to understand is the market does not move as one unit. The market is fluid. The market moves in kind of an ebb and flow. And that's the thing that's important about inflation, too. Inflation does not happen all at once. Inflation kind of spreads out across the market. And that's one of the major issues with, you know, when we print a lot of money, the people that are closest to the printer are the ones that benefit. They get the immediate effect of having more money in their pockets, but prices have not adjusted in many parts of the economy. So they have an advantage over most people who have not had the opportunity to gain capital. By the time that effect hits wages for people that are furthest away from the faucet, people who are working in education, people who are working in like things that are very far away from the financial sectors, those people lose out most. And that's where, you know, the issue of, you know, how do you deal with that? You want to keep inflation low, because then you end up with this disjointed system, and trying to push for increases in wages when that effect hasn't leveled out only exacerbates the issue, because you end up hurting the people that need to pay out these salaries, who are themselves also suffering from high costs. So it's a whole jumbled mess. And a lot of people, as a result, are trying to turn away from traditional American currency, particularly as it comes to digital currencies, Bitcoin, your Dogecoins, things like that. And that's become very popular in the past 10 years. Some people are not crazy about it still as an investment. Some people are. But what's concerning is how the government has attempted to move itself onto this bandwagon as well by establishing a central bank digital currency. Now, it's functionally the same as other digital currencies. But the concerning part comes in when you see the reports that have been put together that argue for this to be a primary currency, to move away from cash. Now, we've been moving away from cash for a while. There are cashless businesses where you cannot pay in cash, which I think is ridiculous. I whenever I go to a business that does not accept cash, I am deeply, deeply appalled. That's just a personal thing, but it's most people don't pay with cash. As someone who's worked in food service, where you're working either a cashier or waiting on tables, most people don't pay with cash. They pay with card. So we've already kind of moved mostly away from cash, and this is where the government has seen an opportunity to introduce an official currency which solely runs digitally. And this allows them the ability to monitor and control currency with greater ease. Now, when money was just little silver coins that we traded and were printed out by the, you know, like countries of the times, the mints of France and Great Britain, stuff like that, you know, that was very hard to control. There was no monetary controls there. And as we moved towards the, you know, modern monetary system, it became easier to control money, especially once we ditched the gold standard. Government could print money, relax the monetary supply, tighten it, do whatever they needed to do with it. Monetary controls became very easy. But the thing that they couldn't do until recently, when we started to digitize our transactions, was monitor where money was going with greater ease. And that's what you are able to do when it comes to digital transfers and stuff like that. Government is able to much more effectively see where is the money going, how is it flowing, who's spending what, who has what, and try to affect monetary policy with greater degrees of information. There is a lack of privacy in monetary, in fiscal exchange now. And with central bank digital currency, it only gets worse. Because when the money is no longer partially physical, when the money is all digital, the gloves are off. Everything is subject to the control of the government. One of the scarier things, outside of complete lack of privacy, there is no privacy in transaction once we go to central bank digital currency. Every transaction is seen. There is absolutely no privacy. Now, some people may, you know, make the, I call it the Patriot Act argument, you're supporting, you know, terrorism by trying to push back on efforts to clamp down on terrorism. Oh, you support, you know, money laundering or things like this if you don't want government to be able to see where money is going. No. The statement of the traditional, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, is ignorant of the, you know, the desire of those in power to control what is being done, to kind of groom societal behavior by discouraging certain things. And that's something that's already done and can be done even further with a central bank digital currency. The thing that you can do with central bank digital currency that you can't do with any other currency is, and this is the scariest thing, I think, negative interest. Now, positive interest is a very intuitive thing. You know, you put your money in the bank, and over time it accumulates interest, and you can, like, get a little extra bonus on top of whatever you put in for holding your money and being a wise citizen who's prudent and saves. Now, say the government wants to increase expenditure, like they want more people to spend money. They can institute negative interest on money. And if you hold on to your money, if you don't spend your money, it loses value. It is a direct tax on your savings, more than just the depreciation of buying and purchasing power. They can literally just make your money be worth less for holding on to it, or any other reason. That's scary. That's very scary. And that's something I always point to and say, you know, be weary of this when people argue for central bank digital currency, because that's to have a lack of control over your own finances, be at the whim of other people's desires and goals. That is a scary and stark lack of freedom. You know, we're so quick to accept convenience and safety as things that we will exchange our freedom for. You know, we're willing to give the government the ability to, you know, spy on people for the stated purpose of combating terrorism. But as Edward Snowden pointed out, by whistleblowing on the NSA, the Obama administration was going way beyond just spying on terrorists and, you know, spying on American citizens, innocent American citizens. We have, you know, like I spoke about last week, the TikTok ban, you know, for the stated goal of combating Chinese interests, but giving the executive the ability to ban any, you know, stated foreign adversary that has social media presence. And that's open-ended. And that's the same issue with this, you know, stated convenience of being able to be completely digital and not deal with the hassle of physical currency, the outdated, you know, paper exchange that we have going on. You have to be very careful with the Faustian bargain of safety for freedom, or freedom for safety, or freedom for convenience. I forget exactly where this is. I believe it was something that was said in Tocqueville's Democracy in America, where the issue of slowly delegating to government the responsibilities that we as individuals had take on by virtue of being free people, taking care of our own expenses, trying to provide for ourselves, things that we at the outset were doing for ourselves but slowly delegated to government. You know, save my retirement fund for me, government. You know, take care of education for me, government. Do these things for me so I don't have to worry about them. I want the convenience of ignorant bliss, of being able to kind of just float around and let you take care of it. And it was almost kind of likened to, you know, it's the nanny state. Let government be our shepherd as we're guided as blissfully ignorant sheep. That's the inevitable outcome as we slowly delegate our freedoms away to government for convenience and safety. And that's the issue that is inherent to a lot of what our conception of the role of government has become. And that is inherent to the issue of dealing with central bank digital currency and monetary and fiscal freedom. It's a cautionary tale of, you know, just how much are you willing to give up until you realize that it's very hard to give things away. No, it's very, very easy to give things hard. Apologies. It's very hard to get things back once you've given them away. It's very hard to gain back your monetary and fiscal freedom once you've given it away to government. It's very hard to get your privacy back once you've given it to government. So on this somber and kind of doomy note over here, I mean, you tuned into a show called The Angry Young Man, who's kind of ranting and raving. You'd expect a little bit of a kind of Debbie Downer attitude to it in a lot of ways, but I have hope. You know, I definitely think that a lot of people post Snowden kind of woke up to a lot of this issue and have kind of lost it in the past 10 years, but I don't believe it's ever too late to turn back, to kind of acknowledge that there's a necessity to reclaim a lot of what we've delegated to government mistakenly. You know, there's a lot of responsibility tied up in freedom. Freedom is power. And in the wise words of Uncle Ben in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. We have the absolute distinct opportunity and the privilege of being able to be free in this country. Something that in most countries, not even half of what we guarantee is guaranteed. But we need to be ready to stand up and hold that. You know, hold on to it, cling on to it, because as so many other people in other parts of the world know, freedom is a very precious thing. And we shouldn't be so quick to give it up for the sake of convenience. On that note, I wish you all a very happy rest of your day, a very wonderful rest of your day. Take care, God bless, and stay free. Because you could do that here, and it really is a beautiful thing. Ciao.
To Massive Music Weekend on WRCT Pittsburgh. From Friday at noon to Sunday at midnight, we'll be spending 60 straight hours of our favorite artists and bands, including live performances from 5 local bands. You can visit WRCT.org to view the full schedule for our annual music marathon. Piatta Italian Street Food is a spot for fresh chopped salads, tossed pastas, and toasted piattas, their take on an Italian-style wrap. With 5 locations in the Pittsburgh area, they've got options to satisfy a variety of cravings. You can find Piata in the Northway Mall, East Liberty Shadyside area, Oakland on Pitt's campus, South Hills near Mount Lebanon, and in the South Hills Robinson area. You can follow Piata on Instagram at Piata Italian Street Food to stay up to date on all things Piata. I've gotten a half hour of antenna. Yeah. This is Camino del Sol, their title song, the title track off of the release Camino del Sol. That was Achilles, the 1983 Island demo version off of En Caval, which is a compilation of Isabel Antenna's works. And before that was Jaffo and Eno. This is To Climb the Cliff.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was On the Boat, where I feel like their antennas, no wave, new wave, post-punk, strange electronic influences are extra prominent. Before that was En Français sur Mars, Silly Things, and Bepop, the 1983 Island demo. And yeah, I got one song left.